Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody? Friday night edition of the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. And yes, Andrew Woods, this reminds me of having a doctor appointment at 8 o'clock, but he makes you wait for a half hour before he sees you. That's right. But you know what? We're going to give you, much like a doctor, we're going to give you what you need. And we're going to cure what ails you. And that is your Bengals fix for sure. I'm Anthony. He's John. And we've got a lot to talk about. Free agency is kicking off next week, and we've got, you know, already some players working on long-term deals. We've got some rumors with the Bengals, as it were, and we've also got so we've got a lot of free agency talk to get to, and then we've got a draft profile to get to as well, and we've got a lot of people. Maybe Friday nights when we need to start doing this, we got a lot of live viewers here tuning in. But John, how are you, my friend?
Doing well on this Friday evening. Happy to see the chat is popping. People are getting back from work. I'm sure happy hour is starting around, but it's an exciting time in the NFL. We're already seeing some, like you said, some deals kind of pop off. The money is flowing, not quite in the Bengals' direction just yet, but, you know, with this team, there's always time. I never like to really get out in front of things ahead of time and immediately, but that's what this year is all about. You're preparing for a podcast, and all of a sudden, boom, Justin Madubuike, $24 million a year for 4 years, big time. So, yeah, but next, stuff could happen at the moment's notice, and we never know when.
That was one of the that was like, hey, they're gonna franchise them, that whole thing, and then it turned into what you just talked about. And that was one of the guys we really wanted to see come to the Bengals potentially, but there are other options out there. You know, we'll explore that. One of the things that we wanted to kind of start off with a little bit was the news that came across, I guess, what was it, yesterday, and it's along in the rumor mill. Matthew Berry of NBC Sports put it out there. And John, it's an annual tradition now, unlike any other, and that is talking about Joe Mixon and his future with the Bay. This is what, the third offseason now we've kind of started really seriously talking about, is he staying, is he going, what's happening, all this sort of thing. It looked like last year was going to be the year that they just, you know, that the two sides were going to part. It seemed to have made sense there. They actually restructured and you know, reworked a deal and made it happen. Joe Mixon came on board and then had a statistically pretty strong season. I mean, I think there are definitely some elements that you say, well, you know, wish we had this, wish we had that. But I mean, all in all, he kind of gave you a Joe Mixon standard statistical season. And here we are again, Matthew Berry saying that there are reports that the Bengals and Joe Mixon are planning to part ways this offseason as the Bengals gear up for free agency and the draft.
So that report, I believe, was like his 25 observations that he got from the combine. He now works for NBC Sports. He used to be like the fantasy football guy at ESPN. Now he's got a more of an expansive role with NBC. But yeah, that was just kind of what he was hearing, along with other rumors and notes around the NFL. And yeah, I think it matches up with what we all kind of believe, which is the expectation is that, you know, by the end of free agency and how everything plays out and all the dominoes fall, Joe Mixon's probably going to be looking for a new team. And going back to last year, of course, there was no chance that Joe Mixon was going to play the 2023 season on the deal that he signed back in 2020. It was either going to be a pay cut or a cut. and the team decided to just cut his pay because they felt that he was the best option still, but they wanted to get more value, obviously just with how running backs are nowadays and just their true value in an NFL offense. It just made all the sense in the world, and obviously Mixon, his best case was to take that deal because if he were to go to the open market, he probably wouldn't have gotten as much money as he did last year, but now you have this roster bonus, this $3 million that is scheduled to enter Joe Mixon's bank account, I believe March 18th, which is a handful of days after the new league year begins.
Yeah.
Mixon's agent put that in there for the purpose of making sure that this doesn't drag on for months like it did last year, and it gives the Bengals enough time after free agency begins to just, you know, survey the running back market, see where the value is, see if there's a lot of comparable talents to Mixon who are making or who are signing for significantly less, maybe not significantly less, because the cap hit for Mixon is $8.5 million. His cash is about $6 million. So anything less than that, that they deem to be similar in terms of what production that they can get out of that running back, I think that would spur them to make the decision to sign a Mixon replacement, essentially, and then to part ways with Mixon and essentially use that cap space to end up paying for that running back. So, yeah, I think that is the expectation still, just because the running back market is so saturated. Like, on top of, obviously, the Saquons and the Derrick Henrys and the Josh Jacobs, the Bengals probably aren't going to play in those waters. But just their presence alone, I think, is going to make it a lot harder for the Zach Mosses, the Devin Singletarys, the A.J. Dillons of the world to really break the bank and make anything more than what Mixon is making right now. Which, again, if you were to get a running back like that who maybe isn't as completely talented as Mixon in some ways, but is still able to get you certain production, certain, you know, efficiency numbers, whatever you want to call it, and just maybe even a better fit for the offense, and it costs less, then that's the whole reason why the Bengals are probably going to do this. And that's the reason why I think Matthew Berry kind of deemed that from, you know, talking at Indianapolis.
It's the timing of this was odd, I guess, just personally speaking, because I had a thought this week about, you know, there's a lot of chatter out there on social media and articles and all kinds of different things about what the Bengals need this offseason, where they need to target in free agency, what they need to get in the draft. And my mind actually went to, they need to find a guy like they had in Samaje Perine, a guy who could pass protect, a guy who could break tackles quite often, maybe the bigger bruiser, more physical type of back that they missed since he departed the team. And really, I think the Bengals, my mind went there for some reason. I was saying, wow, that's just a player. We talk about how much they missed the safeties. We talk about, you know, how they missed X, Y, and Z. And of course, Joe Burrow being hurt, et cetera. But I think they missed that 1B running back. And I like Chase Brown. Travion Williams has shown some nice stuff, but those guys are not, they did not have the size of Samaje Perine. And Perine was just a well-rounded player that fit very well in this offense. And then lo and behold, it's Mixon, the report on this on Mixon here that comes to light this week. And so I don't know. I just found it very odd for the timing of it, just personally speaking, because that's where my mind went. And now it seems not only will they be seeking potentially a guy like Perine somewhere, I would think, that can do a lot of those different things and maybe at that bigger size, but now also a Mixon replacement. So I have to say this, and nothing's set in stone yet about Mixon. We know that. And we've seen this work out a way that not many people predicted, wherein he sticks around. Happened the last two seasons. So I have to say this, and for a long time, I haven't glossed over it. I haven't forgotten about what happened with Joe Mixon in college. Ugly situation. I will say this. You know, I've tried not to talk about it a lot when I talk about Joe Mixon, but since then, he has come to the Bengals and he's completely, for the most part, not been that guy from that video when he was at Oklahoma very early in his college career. He's been a guy who's been a locker room leader. He's been productive in the league, largely stayed out of trouble of all kinds. Last season, there were a couple of hiccups, obviously, in that department, but you know, for a guy that a lot of teams shied away from because of what happened, and rightfully so from that incident, rightfully so, he has come to Cincinnati. He has played well for, what, 8 seasons now, been one of their franchise all-time leading rushers, stayed out of trouble. And so I think for the most part, if this is the end for Joe Mixon and the Bengals got a heck of a lot more mileage and good times out of him than I think a lot of people and a lot of other teams, scouts, et cetera, predicted.
And we easily could have been talking about this last year because, like you were talking about with P. Ryan, the Bengals made an offer to Samaje P. Ryan to stick around.
Yep.
And he decided that he took basically the same exact one from the Denver Broncos because he was unsure about whether or not Joe Mixon was going to stick around. And I think if P. Ryan had re-signed, I think the Bengals would have released Joe Mixon. And I think they would have went P. Ryan and maybe like a Chase Brown type player. Like, I don't know if they would have still taken Chase Brown there, but I think he was obviously, like you said, he was a great fit for the offense and just he provided a lot of value. And I think that was kind of their plan. They wanted to just transform the running back room to more fit what the Joe Burrow offense is. And I just, unfortunately, I don't really think that Joe Mixon really is that. And that's why I don't think he's really just been playing at his best. On top of just running backs get older and they just start to fall off the cliff a little bit. His explosiveness has been down anyways. So yes, I think they would love to get a guy that could pass protect like Samaje Perine. And most running backs nowadays are, you know, weapons out of the backfield that can catch and make, you know, plays with the ball in his hands out of the backfield. So like, I think that's also a given. But in general, I just took away from like Dan Pitcher and Justin Riscati and even Zach Taylor. They're all clamoring for more explosiveness. And unfortunately with Joe Mixon, that's just not really in his game. He's more of a power back that can maybe get to the outside a little bit and maybe outrun some angles in those short yard situations. But they need a guy like Chase Brown. They need another guy that can kind of take the load off of him and just be able to break off one because that's so valuable for your offense. And, you know, soon to be 28 years old, it's not really in Joe Mixon's game anymore. And that's part of the reason why his value at $8.5 million cap hit, $6 million cash just doesn't equate. And they're going to be looking for probably someone more explosive than him at this point.
Yeah. Like you said, if we talked about the statistics that Joe Mixon put up, not only this year, but in the years that he has been healthy with the Bengals, if you can kind of piece that monster together, statistically speaking, through, you know, by committee, right? If you can kind of piece that together through a couple of players on a cheaper deal. And then, you know, this kind of transitions into the next topic of potential targets in free agency. If this is what the Bengals end up doing and relieving themselves of some of this, the cap hit on this, does this give you the feeling that for the second offseason in a row, the Bengals are looking at taking a swing for the fences in an outside target like they did with Orlando Brown Jr. last year that kind of fell into their lap? Does this now give you the idea that they're going to go push hard for one of the, maybe not the top guys, but, you know, a B player, tier B, B plus type of player, an outside free agency, be it an interior defensive lineman, which we know they need, you know, maybe this opens things up for T. Higgins. I mean, what does this tell you anything, essentially? It's my long-winded way of saying it. Does this tell you anything that you maybe didn't think a couple of weeks ago before this report?
Not necessarily. And again, I think like a decision on Mixon isn't going to happen until I think a free agency has already begun. This team traditionally, you look at the average date that when they make these like cap casualties, it's always mid to late March. Andy Dalton was cut, I think, after the draft, after Joe Burrow was drafted.
I think you're
so
right.
They always wait to, you know, get the actual replacement in the building signed, sealed, and delivered. So yeah, it's going to open up cap space, but I think they have enough cap space to make a move like that if they'd want. The problem is, Anthony, like we look at interior defensive line, like you said, potentially offensive tackle. There's one big fish out there, Michael Onwenu. There's not a lot of guys at those positions that either A, fit their requirements in terms of age, in terms of being an ascending player, because a lot of the defensive tackles kind of on the older side. And there's just not a lot of quality offensive tackles like that because quality offensive tackles rarely make it to free agency anyways. So it's like at those two positions where they have had a precedent of spending a lot of money, I don't really see the guy that I think they would go after because Christian Wilkins is going to get more than Madubuike at this point. He's going to break $100 million. He's going to break $60, $70 million guaranteed. That's not those aren't waters that the Bengals will ever swim in, regardless of, you know, how much they've modernized and everything. And again, there's not really an offensive tackle like that outside of Onwenu. And we don't even know if the Bengals view him as a tackle. He could be viewed as a guard because I think that opinion is shared throughout a majority of the league. I look at maybe safety because there's been reports about the Bengals, you know, looking at like the more expensive areas of that market. But that market's so saturated too. It's almost like it's not even wise to, you know, make like the highest signing at that position just because there's so many players out there. So I don't really see like that big fish that Hendrickson or Orlando Brown or even the DJ Reader in this year's free agency class, just because of the nature of the class, the guys who are available, and there's still that, you know, hold on not offering a lot of guaranteed money outside of the guys like Joe Burrow. Like Joe Burrow, I think, is an exception to the rule. Jamar Chase is going to be an exception to the rule. I don't really know if they're ready to do that for these external free agents outside of like the giant signing bonus that Orlando Brown got. Like that was their way of kind of compromising or kind of, you know, just making that deal happen. I don't really know if there's a player like that they're able to do that for this year, for the positions of need, at least.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
I'm going to tell you, Jason Von Stein here, loyal listener. Good to hear from him saying Bengals awarded 2 6-round picks, the compensatory picks for losing some of their free agents, namely the safeties, right, last year. So I'm going to tell you that if the Bengals do a big dip in safety for a veteran in free agency this year, now there are some names out there that sound pretty good. We previewed Geno Stone, right? We previewed him as a free agent target. That'd be a nice get. Justin Simmons. I mean, there are some nice players out there, but it would piss me off because I'm going to tell, not because of those players they would net in, because right. of here we go here. You lost your two starting safeties. You get 2 compensatory picks in late in day 3 of the draft. And now the following year, you're kind of admitting that was a total failure of a plan, or lack thereof, I guess, in the safety market. And then you go and you make a big foray because you didn't want to pay Jesse Bates big money. That whole situation would just, I'd be like, okay, cool. Maybe they remedied some of the problems from last year, but I would just piss me off because it felt like you were then just treading water from 2 years ago, potentially, when you could have just taken care of your player at that point last year, admitted that he was a good player. And even though it's not a premium position, you still should have paid him. And now you know what I'm saying? It would be a really irritating set of circumstances. I guess I would be relieved because you get a quality player and you are, like I said, remedying a situation that was a problem last year. But I don't know. It just feels like that would just be a running in circle type of situation for me.
Yeah. And the problem with that, even materializing, the top safety on the market is Xavier McKinney, 25 years old, great all around player. I think everyone who is a fan of the Bengals would love to see him in the defense. He would solve a lot of problems. His agent's David Mulligan. Like if he's representing a player who is trying to sign the top contract at that position for that year, the Bengals are not going to get it done. That's why they didn't get it done with Bates. It's why they're not going to get it done with T. Higgins. So I don't see Xavier McKinney being a Cincinnati Bengal. Other than that, it's like Cam Curl, Kyle Duggar. He got transition tagged by the Patriots, so the Patriots could match whatever offer.
Winfield, those are like
Winfield got tagged as well.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah.
So like again, there are plenty of names, which is why I think ultimately it's going to be maybe a little bit more of an expensive type of Nick Scott type of signing. Nick Scott signed for $4 million a year last year, and whatever safety comes in, I'm sure Nick Scott's going to get his pink slip and be out the door. Which to me, it feels like obviously they really lucked out with Jordan Battle in the 3rd round. Like they found like a solid starter there. They found an answer at one of those 2 spots. And I think with Nick Scott, you know, failing so miserably at just being the veteran free safety who couldn't tackle and couldn't communicate and just was a terrible fit with the defense overall, like a veteran signing is essentially replacing that wrong and is essentially, you know, remedying the immediate succession plan for Von Bell and Jesse Bates, because obviously Dax Hill was supposed to replace one of those 2. And obviously if they do sign a veteran free safety, I think it does speak to what they feel about Dax Hill, and they probably want to have him in that role that he played more at Michigan, which was in the slot, that overhang defender, almost like a box safety at that point, which I think is still a valuable spot for him to be at. He'll be on the field and on important passing downs, he'll be on the field in important moments. So it's not like it's a complete bust of a pick, but you're right. Like if they do invest a decent amount at safety, it is basically just trying desperately to right a massive wrong that they had last year, which is unfortunate because I don't know if they could have gotten a deal done with Bates, but like he is the type of player that you try to extend at all costs, and they couldn't get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other problematic area that I think the Bengals have to have a lot of investments in, whether it is bringing back some of the in-house guys, and I think there are a couple that bring you some value. I mean, arguably three of the guys that they've had recently, Wilcox, Sample kind of proved a little bit of a higher value in a more of an H-back role last year. And then, you know, you had Tanner Hudson showing up and making some plays, particularly with Browning down the stretch. I mean, some of those guys can be your depth chart, you know, fillers. I don't think they're your top tight ends, but as Andrew notes here, and Andrew was the one who made the funny comment about the doctor's appointment at the beginning of the show, by the way. So kudos, my friend, kudos. That was comical. But as he notes, Schultz got the deal, right? So that's a player you thought would have been a nice fit for the Bengals. And now all of a sudden these teams are kind of making a run at the tight ends and that market is thinning out. And so now the Bengals, you know, the draft is going to be an option. There are some players there that intrigue you, but that's another area in which the Bengals need some help. And, you know, the options are definitely lessening.
There was a quote I want to bring up by, I think it was like CBS Sports' Jonathan Jones. And he was texting like an NFL executive about why tight ends are kind of going off the board right now. And it was, the sentiment was that teams are not entirely confident about this upcoming tight end draft class like they were last year, which is why, you know, outside of like Hayden Hurst and Josh Oliver, there wasn't a ton of like big tight end deals last year in free agency. And it's why like the Bengals like ended up with like Irv Smith for like a million and a half. So I think the vibe is a little bit different now where you're right. Like the Hunter Henrys, the Dalton Schultzes of the world are kind of just accepting re-signings right now. And they're not really testing the market because I think teams are just willing to just go ahead and you know, pay it. And it's not great for the Bengals who can't have access to these guys until quote unquote legal tampering begins on Monday. But it does, I think, have an emphasis on guys like Tanner Hudson, Drew Sample, who by all accounts, I think the team wants to bring back. There've been multiple reports about that. And the logic tracks too. Tanner Hudson was their best receiving tight end last year. Drew Sample really found a role as that niche kind of supersize Samaje Perine, if you will, just the guy that at the backfield that could pass protect and be like a check down option. So I think they would love to have both those guys back. And the fact that the market is now thinning a little bit, I think it definitely ups their value. And I'm sure at this point, it's Friday when we were recording this. All throughout the week, the team has been making offers to these in-house free agents. I think even Chidobe Awuzie kind of subtweeted his own offer from the Bengals, and it was like reflective of him not getting the money or the offer that he wanted. They've already made these offers to these guys, and it's just a matter of if they want to test to see what the open market has in store for them, and if the market doesn't materialize the way that they want, then they go back to the Bengals and take the best offer, and then that deal happens, you know, whatever, like Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, or something like that. So I'm sure offers have been made to Sample and Hudson, but at this point, I think they're looking at a thinner market, and they're thinking my value or their collective value is probably increased just because there's less options out there.
That's, yeah. And I think also, speaking of the tight ends, there's now this trend, given the success of Travis Kelce and you know, the kid on the Lions last year. I mean, Laporta and other. Yeah. I think there's just a league trend. That's kind of the new league trend is getting those pass catching tight ends. And when you have one, it's a premium. It helps a young quarterback. It helps quarterbacks in general, but it helps a young quarterback. You see what it did for CJ Stroud to have Schultz in that mix there. So, you know, I think teams, if they identify that they have one, let's do it. And Schultz last year, I think got, if I remember, to your point about they're taking the deals that are just on the table before testing free agency, I think Schultz kind of got a little burned last year, right? Yeah. I mean, I think he thought he was going to get the big multi-year deal that he got this year, and instead he settled for that one-year rental deal with the Texans, and it ended up working out well for him. So I think, to your point, some of these guys have either been burned before, or, you know, Hunter Henry, who's, you know, with the Patriots there, that's a guy I think he's getting up there in age a tiny bit, so maybe, you know, maybe he just kind of felt like, hey, let's just keep this where this is, and this deal is fine, and I don't want to risk it. You see here, there's some others asking about some reunions with Bengals who are set to potentially hit free agency, particularly at the tight end position, Hayden Hurst being one, CJ Uzomah. The reports there are that he is going to be a cap casualty of the Jets. I mean, we've heard, I think, for two off seasons now about Carl Lawson also with the Jets, right? So I don't know, anything there that you feel like, and I know both Uzomah and Uzomah and Hurst were fan favorites, of course, and for good reason. Uzomah was a well-liked guy in and outside of the locker room for sure. So I don't know. Do you think there's going to be interest there from the Bengals, or has that ship kind of sailed? Or, I mean, do those guys then supplant, you know, your Wilcoxes, your Samples, et cetera, as kind of the down the pecking order of that depth chart at that position at that point?
It would be kind of poetic for Uzomah to come back as tight end three, because that was what he was, I think, the first 4 years of his career here behind the likes of both Tyler's and Eifert and Croft. But I think that ship has sailed. He's 31, coming off a really bad knee injury. He is nothing more than just, I think, at this point, a camp body. If you need a tight end and he's far along in his recovery, I don't really see why any team would sign him right now. I think he needs to focus on that. He's about to have a kid with our girl Yaz.
Congrats to both of them. Yeah, for sure.
So it should be an exciting offseason for both of them, and hopefully he can get healthy. But yeah, I think at this point, that's more along the lines of if you need a tight end and it's late July, August, see if he's available. I think there would be more interest in Hurts just because obviously the team loved him in 2022. They offered him to come back, but he obviously took the best deal available to him with the Panthers. Panthers blew up in his face. Apparently he didn't like it at all down there, and I think he did probably have regret about leaving Cincinnati in the first place. And knowing that there was a rapport between him and Burrow as not only just a guy that can get yards after the catch, but just a, like you said, like a good guy in the locker room and someone who really brought a lot of energy to the offense in general, he would probably cost no more than what he cost originally in 2022. He might even cost less just because he got paid like, you know, over $10 million in guaranteed money last year with the Panthers. He's not really looking to really cash out again, especially, I mean, we should mention this, like obviously Uzomah had the knee injury, but Hayden Hurst had a concussion so bad that he like suffered memory loss. And that was really scary in and of itself. Apparently he's all cleared now, but there's probably a lot more about that situation that we don't know. Hopefully the Bengals do know and have more information on that. But first things first, hopefully that he's all good. And if he wants to continue playing football, by all means, go for it. But no one should be rushing him back to the field anytime soon just because of what happened. But I think there would be mutual interest between Hurst and the Bengals. But like you said, is he really the guy that you want to be the unquestioned starter like he was in 2022? Probably not at this point. He's 2 years older. And again, he's coming off a pretty traumatic event. There should still be interest in the draft and maybe even in free agency. But I think out of those three, like I'm not really even considering Carl Lawson at this point. Hurst is probably the most likely to come back.
In a world of business decisions and a show that we kind of pride ourselves on trying to be as objective as possible, there are some players and scenarios that pull at the heartstrings, and definitely CJ and Hayden, or both, you know, both of those guys would coming back. While, you know, it may, you'd have some questions on the business side of things, potentially with the injuries and all that kind of stuff, pulling on the heartstrings a little bit. It'd be kind of a cool story, at least from this dope sitting on this side of the microphone. I think it'd be pretty cool, but, we're going to transition in just a second, but before we do, and what's a surprise, a pleasant surprise that you think the Bengals, if you're just, let's have some fun, a pleasant surprise they may engage in this week, you know, whether that's flirting with a superstar player, bringing them in, or, you know, going after a position that you felt like they may not go after with a pretty high profile player. And free, I mean, what's something, if you were to call your shot, what's something that you feel that they would maybe do next week where you go, ooh, that's interesting and surprising?
I've been trying to think about this because there's been a surprise. There's been at least one surprise, whether positive or negative, in each of the last four free agency classes. Yep. And I can't really figure out what this year is going to be. Nothing really tracks in terms of being predictable, but of course nothing before was predictable. And even the Orlando Brown situation, like no one had any idea that was coming. I don't think even Orlando Brown had any idea that was on the table until he realized that he wasn't going to get what he wanted from, you know, the Jets or the Steelers or even the Chiefs. So a lot of the stuff does develop just in real time, and there could just be a player like a. I really doubt that Christian Wilkins is going to get anything less than what he's projected, but if for whatever reason it doesn't happen, like that's the Orlando Brown in this case. It's instead of $25 million a year, it's like $17-18 million a year, which again, far fetched. But at this time last year, Orlando Brown was far fetched. He was supposed to make well over $20 million a year. He was a 4-time Pro Bowler. He was 27 years old, entering the prime of his career, just won a Super Bowl. Like Christian Wilkins should do well. And he should find a new home, and he should be one of the highest paid, if not the highest paid defensive tackle in the league. But if that doesn't happen, he's the perfect fit for the Bengals and what they need. And that would be like the biggest fish that I could see them getting. Unfortunately, it's impossible for us to speculate on that because it's just so unlikely. It makes no sense why Christian Wilkins would be underpaid that much and get no attention on the market. Other than that, though, it's just like I feel like you're going to see... I think the Bengals should realize that they kind of screwed up last year in terms of waiting too long. They have a really high hit rate of just getting these deals done and legal tampering. Like outside of Trey Waynes and Xavier Suofilo, that's where your Alex Kappas, your Ted Karras's, your Awuzie's, your Hilton's, your Ogunjobi's, your Orlando Brown's, like most of their best free agent signings outside of Von Bell have come in the first 3 days. So I feel like that should be a lesson learned from last year when they waited too long and they ended up with Irv Smith and Terrell Basham and Nick Scott. Like, That should be their lesson to kind of attack this because they're pretty good at attacking it. And that could lead to maybe they splurge for Noah Fant at tight end because the market's thin. Like that could also be something. Again, the guaranteed money aspect of that I think makes me pause a little bit. And also they haven't really paid a tight end like that. But again, we're looking at things that we're not really expecting because I think they've just made that a theme over the past 4 years that they're just here to break trends.
Yeah. I would go the Wilkins route as well as unexpected. I would go, you know, maybe an interior offensive lineman where you go, that would be interesting. Maybe that, you know, that would be something a little unexpected, but also expected. I'm going to go a little bit with T Bowles here. T Bowles 54. Maybe it's the T deal, you know, I mean, internally, maybe that's the thing that gets ironed out here earlier in free agency than we expect. I think he wants to be here. I mentioned this. I don't know if I mentioned this on our show. I mentioned it, I think, when we went on Jeff Trenipal's show, Strawberry Ice. These guys have a history together, not only, of course, playing against each other, Joe Burrow and T. Higgins in college, but when they come out to my neck of the woods and do the Jordan Palmer thing, those guys, when they were entering the draft, they were working out together then, and they built a rapport then, and I think that – played into the Bengals drafting T a little bit and likely maybe getting a little report from Burrow and maybe even Jordan Palmer. I don't know what the relationship is there, but I think this relationship goes back a long time. T has experienced a lot of success with the Cincinnati Bengals personally and with the team. I know last year didn't go the way that anybody wanted for him or for the team, but I don't know. I'm a little more optimistic on this than I think others are. And if the Bengals are talking about getting rid of or letting other offensive mainstays walk in the name of Tyler Boyd, who we haven't even talked about yet, and Joe Mixon, maybe this is the thing that gets done here. But, that would be a surprise for sure. But that's one I kind of thought about.
Not only would it be a surprise, 3 years ago, we had a little charity event here for Ken Anderson and Anthony Munoz and Ken Riley and their foundations. And if we had raised enough money, I offered to just down some hot sauce in celebration.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I will down more hot sauce if the Bengals extend T. Higgins before July.
Ooh, let's get to, we're gonna need to clip that and put that on social. Just let's just tag the Bengals on that. I don't know what happened because on Twitter, John. I don't know what you paid Elon or what, but we have a lot of live. I mean, this is the amount of live viewers we have right now is higher than some of the post playoff shows that we playoff game shows that we've done. I don't know what you did on the Twitter side, buddy, but
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, now we're going to definitely leverage that because you're talking about downing some hot sauce and a lot. I may join you on that. I don't think I would let you go alone on that. I may join you on that. I don't know what I've got if this gets done because we want it to get done. I think everybody wants it to get done. But yeah, that would be you and I both just choking down hot sauce on the air would be great viewing, I'm sure.
I wish I wasn't as confident, but Mike Evans situation that just happened. Like, he went to his agent and he said, enough of this. I want to be in Tampa Bay.
Get it done.
I want to finish my career here. And they got it done. And it is proof that the agent works for the player, not the other way around. So there is a path for T to just be like, hey, I know we're pushing for guarantees here. We might be pushing for a higher average annual value. We might just be in the middle of a wide receiver bubble. All these factors play into it. I get it. Mulligata works for the company that tries to maximize these players' earnings. I understand that. But if T really wants to just get it done, he has the power to make that happen. TJ Watt did it with the Steelers a couple years ago. Mike Evans just did it now. There's a way to do this. And if he hasn't done it by now, I just kind of feel like no matter how much he loves Joe Burrow, and I'm sure he loves playing with the Bengals, he loves playing with Jamar, he loves playing with Burrow, he loves all that. I'm not doubting his commitment to the Bengals at all. But if he really wanted to just get it done by any means necessary, I think he would have approached them at this point by now with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. Well, we pinned this earlier. Thank you, J. Lou. Appreciate that. And listening on Twitter. So appreciate you tuning in and for the compliment there. Want to remind folks before we get to our draft profile, and I know there's going to be a lot of people rolling the eyes on this one for me because of where this young man went to school, but that's a different topic for a different time. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast, and we are having some fun. Maybe Friday afternoons, evenings is maybe when we hit a sweet spot. I don't know, but you can get this show a number of ways. If you like watching the video, by the way, we spliced up the Fuaga draft profile from a couple of shows ago. That's a standalone show on our YouTube channel, so go check that out. If you want to check out the videos, you got to like the Cincy Jungle Facebook page with about 85,000 others, 88,000 others. So go give that a like. We also stream on the Cincy Jungle Twitter account at Cincy Jungle. So go there. We stream on the podcast show account at Bengals OBI and also my own at CJ. We got a stream from John's too. We got to get it simul stream to John's account. But yeah, so we're and then of course our YouTube channel, you can subscribe to that underneath John by that Cincy Jungle icon. Click that show icon, Orange and Black Insider, to subscribe. After you hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up on the episode. And of course, you got to click the bell to be notified when we go live and when new content is available. If you like the audio side of things, we are on all the platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, all of those ones. We should be there under the Cincy Jungle podcast channel, our show, Three and Out with Jason and Kevin. By the way, great job by Jason going to that Joe Burrow event thrown by LaSoup and Guinness, the charity event on Sunday. We have that footage up as well. He got to speak to Jimmy Burrow briefly, as well as Paul Daner Jr., who was nothing but kind to Jason, from what I understand. So thank you, Mr. Daner. So anyway, you can get the audio side of things through all of your favorite platforms there. Our show, Three and Out. The coach, Matt Minnick, doing coach speak and chalk talk. And of course, Talking Football with Bengal Jim and friends, all on there. Subscribe to the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. By the way, John, before we get to, I have to tell you, before we get to the draft profile that we're going to do here, you did a really entertaining, and this is why you got to follow John Sheeran on Twitter, John_Sheeran, with Randall answering questions. We had a Randall Q&A. I almost felt like he should be replacing me with how he did there. So we haven't done a listener questions live episode for a little while. We plan on getting back to that, but you kind of did one on your own. Randall went rogue and did one on his own, right?
You know what? It's been 5 years, I think, of him just looking at my butt doing this. I think he just wanted his time to shine. He didn't want to do it live. You know, he wanted it kind of pre-recorded. I think he was a little nervous and everything. His voice sounded a little bit weird. I don't know if he like was drinking beforehand, but I think he did a really good job.
He's got that Barry White thing going. He was very low.
And he kept it concise. He kept it, you know, very informative, and I'm proud of him. And but I think he can't tell, but he's asleep right now. You're not gonna be able to tell.
It took it out of him. Yeah.
So it might be a while until he does that again.
It's like James Brown or Elvis towards the end of their respective illustrious careers, where they were, you know, they were kind of hunched over and they really gave it their all. So he's resting up. All right, we're going to get to the draft profile here. And Jason, you couldn't have teed this up better, my friend. You just couldn't have teed this up better. Let's talk about running back replacements. So we're going to, and I, of course, you, for those who watch this show, you know that I, based on where I live and everything, there is a little bit of an affinity for me for the Pac-12 and the USC Trojans. I have tried not to talk about Trojan players here, but the reason I brought up this player is because, and why we're going to look at him, is because he did, I think, a little bit better at the combine than a lot of people think. And this is one of those, this is one of those things where this guy's a little older, transfer, kind of tried to maximize some exposure for him towards the end of his college career and get on a potential kind of a super team that ended up disappointing. But it is one of the running backs from USC, Marshawn Lloyd, that we're going to talk about here in just a second. We're going to pull up the film here in just a second. But John, what do you know about this kid just going into it? Were you going in a little blind to it, or what were you thinking when I told you that we were going to share this one for you?
I knew that he was from USC and that he transferred there and that we're going to talk about him.
Do you know where he transferred from?
I do not.
You don't?
I don't.
So Lloyd transferred from, if you can believe it, I told you I am, you know, USC and true and true. There is another school that goes by USC or SC like this, and that it would be South Carolina. So I did. We're going to pull this up in just a second here. It's going a little slow loading it up for you. But this kid, here's the thing with it, with him, John. And just to give you a preview of what we're going to talk about, he's a guy that I didn't think, granted, of course, he was a player that, you know, showed some things and had some breakaway plays and everything, but you kind of felt like maybe he was going to run, I don't want to say mediocre or pedestrian, but just kind of a, 40 time, and you were kind of wondering about the explosiveness. There are questions on what, you know, what his ceiling is and all of that, but you know, I think there's a lot to like with this guy, and his build is really interesting as well. You'll see that in just a second. I'm going to stop teasing it. I'm going to start pulling this up here so you can see what I'm talking about. He's not overly huge, but he definitely packs a punch, and he's a guy that I think the Bengals would be highly interested in, or potentially interested in. There are some questions, and I'm going to share this with you right here. Marshawn Lloyd, and we'll go through some clips. We'll go through some things as we usually do with these types of players. But again, he went to South Carolina and he went to USC, transferred to USC along with that flood of all the talent that they came with Caleb Williams and all those players. Obviously never materialized the way that the Trojans envisioned in terms of national championships, or even really, especially last year. Wow. Kind of a disaster, but I like this guy's running. So you see 5'9", packs a punch, 220, 5'9", 220. He is 23. So, you know, a little older, and that comes with the transfer situation. 4.46 in the 40 from the combine, a 1.56 10-yard split, John. 36-inch vertical, 9 feet, 10 inches on the broad, and some nice strength, 25 reps logged at the combine on the bench press. So deceptive speed, pretty decent strength, explosiveness, et cetera. We'll show the RAS in just a second here as well. Not a ton of touches because it was kind of by committee. 116 rushes, 820 yards. Though, look at the average yards per carry, 7.1. There is a caveat to that. We'll show you in just a second. Just 13 catches, 232 receiving yards, though. 9 touchdowns. All of them were on the ground this last year, that is. So, you know, there's not a lot of, so even though there's the age, there's not a high volume here, and that kind of plays throughout his entire college career, but there's a lot of stuff on film that's fun here. I do have some hesitancy here. A lot of his plays, of course, came against defenses that may or may not have been the strongest in the Pac-12, but they were playing the pass with Caleb Williams, right? And so here you go. It's and a lot of stuff to the outside, you know, gets through some contact, gets you through there. And then, of course, here, you know, nice one cut and kind of go, right? And then another nice cut. And this is one of the themes I've seen with him. As he gets to the open field, as the guys try and tackle him, they're trying to chase him down, they kind of just slide off his back. And that comes with his build of the big, kind of the broad shoulders. You'll see him here. Here's a fun one from South Carolina. Woo! That one's fun. I like that one a lot. And so here he is again, kind of cutting it back and getting into the end zone. That was earlier in his career, obviously. A lot, but look at this. A lot of this stuff is designed to go just kind of outside. My qualm with it is a lot of it is RPO. A lot of it, there's some nice open field speed right here. This is against Notre Dame. A lot of it is off RPO. A lot of it, here's a nice reception for a good gain here as well. Gets out of some tackles a lot of times. Good open field speed. Here it is on another swing pass. The one thing, sometimes his jukes almost look a little out of control. He almost contorts his body too much sometimes. So you may want to get that under wraps a little bit. You see the RAS 8.9, so it's pretty good. Size grade, okay, mainly pointing to the height as the problem there. Explosion grade, good. And, of course, this is from the great Kent Lee Platt. Go follow him at MathBomb. Want to give him his credit and his due. And then look at the speed grade, right? The agility not recorded, at least that I could find. There may be a more up-to-date one. But the speed grade there with the splits and everything, that's pretty solid stuff, particularly for a guy at 220. 220 is not the hugest size at running back, but that's a pretty good. And again, here's the pros and cons. Effective out of shotgun, sneaky, athletic, and versatile. Quarterback attention towards his production. Age versus touches. Is he a three down player in the league? And then the shoulders, build, and maneuvering are all things that came to mind there. So those are some of the things that I saw with him. Again, broad shouldered guy, good speed. You see a lot of guys kind of slide off of him in the open field as they try and tackle him because of his build. I like him. I just worry, and maybe it is a good fit because of the RPO stuff for the Bengals, right? There was just a lot of that, and it was kind of a lot of out of shotgun and just cut it outside. And you wonder about the effectiveness. You know, of course, defenses are going to respect Joe Burrow as well. Colleges were just hyper-obsessed with everything Caleb Williams was doing, so the focus was just not really on the running backs at that point. Still, high yards per carry average, pretty good – you know, pretty good build, pretty good speed. And I just think there's a lot to like here in a guy, I think, who rose his stock after his time in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think that testing performance warrants a draft pick, probably. Maybe on like day three, just because, I mean, older running backs, that's already kind of like a, not a death sentence, but it's just like there's only so much value for those guys. Even if the workload wasn't too extreme in college, going into the NFL at the age of 23 at a position where at 26, 27, you're just kind of ostracized at that point. The long-term impact is not great, but I think just in that short intermediate interim term, like there's a lot of value there as an athlete. Honestly, I looked up his mock draftable like spider chart, which shows like his percentiles in each of like the testing drills compared to his size and everything. And I was curious how he measured up to Doug Martin, and it's honestly pretty damn similar, because you don't see a lot of guys who are sub 5'9", over 220, and that explosive. And he's even faster than what Doug Martin tested in the 40. I think Doug Martin was like mid 4.4s, being that dense, like that's pretty damn rare. And honestly, I think not even Rudy Johnson was that. Rudy Johnson was also a mid 4.5 guy at 5'10", 225, but Rudy Johnson was also very explosive, and so was Doug Martin. Doug Martin was a lot more quicker in terms of his agility. That's what made him just such an amazing athlete at his size. But I think having that explosion and speed with that power that comes with that type of build, there's value in that, in a guy that can get you, you know, a handful of carries a game to just keep your other running backs fresh. And I think for this point for the Bengals, you're not looking at a running back draft in the top 100 picks. You have much bigger needs to address. And honestly, if you're entering the draft with Chase Brown, presumably a free agent replacement for Joe Mixon, you're not really looking for a guy that's going to take over a giant workload. So I think Lloyd, he kind of fits the bill for the types of running backs that they should be looking for, not only a guy that, you know, doesn't have to take on a huge workload because of draft status, but someone that can break off an explosive run or two and just keep the other guys fresh and is kind of hard to bring down. Like, all those attributes, I think the Bengals would be very much intrigued with. There's been a lot of hype about Jalen Wright, the kid from Louisville who like ran out of the building at Indianapolis. Just any type of speed that they can get combined with power to boot, I think is a plus for the Bengals, who, again, probably shouldn't invest more than a day three pick at the running back anyway. So, yeah, well, like, wait, when you're that old at that point, you're a day three pick probably guaranteed. But I don't think that's like too big of a problem for the Bengals if they can use his athleticism.
So here I'm looking at his stats. He's never had, and I noted, if you noticed, I said on the video there, 116 rushes last year for USC. That's the highest he had none as a true freshman that I can see at South Carolina. Redshirt freshman year, 64 attempts, then 111 the following year, and 116 for the Trojans last year, and no more than 18 catches. So, I mean, really, with the age being up there, there's still not a lot of wear and tear. So I think that may be where teams look at that and say, okay, there's a give and take there. I will say this, you know, when we talk about power with this kid, and granted, I haven't gone way deep into the film, but a lot of the clips, and you saw them in the ones that I just showed there, it's not, you know, absolutely trucking or flooring a guy, right? It's getting into the open field, slightly outrunning guys, and then as they try and grab onto him, you see a lot of the, you know, slide off the back. And I think it is due to power, yes, but really, again, I go back to the build of the broad shoulders. He just looks like like a big rectangle up here sometimes, yeah. You know, when he's running. And that may be where that kind of that juke that he does gets a little wild, because he's just got such those big broad shoulders. But I don't know that he's ever going to be alpha dog for an NFL team or the Bengals or anybody. I don't know that he's going to be alpha dog. I think this guy, though, much like how if you were to approach things even close to what the Baltimore Ravens do, where there's a nice committee and guys are effective, this is a guy I feel like that would fit in well, maybe with them too, right? As a player that, you know, kind of a one cut, get some power, have some pretty good speed and go. So I think you're probably, like you said, maybe looking rounds three. I don't think he'll last to round five, but maybe rounds three through five, somewhere in there. And that's maybe a guy that is a heavy rotator in your offense to start off, and you see where it goes. There's a little bit of, you know, you could point to Zach Charbonnet a little bit as a kind of a guy that you feel like build wise. Charbonnet was a little taller, I think, but you know, kind of that same build and a little bit of speed, a little bit of power, and you like what you see on film.
Yeah, round three, like, would you take him in round three, like, knowing, like, what the Bengals, like, have to do on top of, like, in the draft? Or is that, like, where you just think, like, at the highest he goes?
I think that's the high. I think that's his high point. I think you're probably looking, when that day three kicks off, and, you know, that flurry of picks to start the day, I think he's kind of right at that mix in round four. That's what I think. I don't think he gets to round five. I think you may get a team, you know, that and I don't know offhand, I don't have the draft order in front of me, but maybe there's a team at the end of round three that picks, they don't have as many picks as some of the other teams, and or, you know, they're kind of like a Chiefs type team that, hey, we're just kind of playing with house money because of all the Super Bowls we've won recently. We need a running back. Let's just take him because we like what he does. Maybe there's a team that does that gets in there in round three. But I think probably round four at this point is fair, and that's good value. And I think he can come in right away, again, because there's not a lot of wear and tear. He is older, so maybe there's a little bit of a, you know, a less of a learning curve in that way. And he can come in and help a team right away.
And that's the only benefit of, I mean, when you're that old entering the league, the expectation is that you are in your, like, athletic prime. And I think that's pretty clear based off of what he did at Indianapolis. Like, 4.46 at 225 and 5.9, that's that actually ranks in the 95th percentile for speed score in terms of James Coburn's data. He's like 80 something percentile in explosion. So that's an elite athlete, even if it doesn't always, like you said, like it may not look quite like that on film, but when you're going up against like the best athletes in football, like that does end up mattering, you know, especially with if that's your calling card, like, you know, the more that you have, the better for sure. So yeah, like, you also mentioned the Ravens and just how they kind of handle their running back room and just the way that they distribute the ball. Like, I think the Bengals kind of saw towards the end of this past season when Joe Mixon and Chase Brown shared more of the workload. I think both of them kind of benefited from that. And I think the more that they kind of lean into that and you know, lean, you know, go away from just having one bell cow, I think the better for the offense and better for the run game. So I think that's definitely the direction that they're going to end up going.
Yeah. And, you know, we just talked about this being a play, you know, I'm almost now going, man, this may be a guy the Ravens really like. and so, hey, I mean, we had, we had Highsmith on the show before he entered the draft, and he left and I'm like, man, that's a Steeler or Raven. I just, you know, that tweener edge guy. And of course that's who he is. And he's great at what he does. So, but anyway, this would be, you know, a very intriguing pick and a guy that I think I could see the Bengals taking a look at, particularly with that explosive. So the one that surprised me on all those clips was that one. Granted, it was early in his career, but that South Carolina clip where he hurdles that player in the middle of the field, I knew he had the speed and everything, but that shows the explosion, really, to be able to launch yourself over that player and any athleticism. I really like that clip. I like a lot of the others, but Marshawn Lloyd, a guy to watch on draft weekend. We are going to get out of here. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. I still can't believe the live viewer numbers that we are seeing Friday evening, particularly on the Twitter side of things. Crazy numbers. Thank you for watching and tuning in. What do you got for us, John, as we get out of here? Drop the mic.
Might as well shout out a fellow John in the comments section. It is his friend's birthday, Mike Hawk. So, oh, no!
No! No! I'm glad you said it and I didn't have to say it. that is ultimate gotcha right there. Now we're going to start losing the viewers. Ultimate gotcha. And I got to tell you, I didn't I didn't actually see that until I didn't really catch that. But that is ultimate early 90s Bart Simpson calling Moe's Tavern type of stuff right there. Wow. Well, ashamed. we're gonna try and I don't know if we want to edit that out or I don't know if we want to make that viral. I don't know. It was good. It's good.
Apparently all Twitter is watching it, so.
Yeah. Now Elon's really going to take it and run with it, right? Anyway, I don't have a ton. I just want to say that I appreciate you, John. I made you wait around today. I made our listeners wait around a little later than they expected. But I don't know. Maybe we found a little something with this Friday evening thing.
We found the trolls we found, Anthony.
Yeah, I know. I guess we did. But just thank you to all the listeners. Thank you, John. And good job also to both you and Jason Garrison at your time at the Combine and Jason doing that work for us at the weekend event, benefiting the Joe Burrow Hunger Foundation. And so good stuff there. Go check out the video. Go check out the articles Jason wrote. Go check out the video clips. We played them last show from John with Duke Tobin and others. So go check those out as well. And go follow John on his Twitter account, John_Sheeran. I'm assuming you already do anyway. Go get the show how you can. We appreciate all the support. And no more prank call birthday wishes, guys. Come on. No more of that. Take care, everybody. Have a good weekend. We'll see you soon.